Yeah, just like in the documentary Spaceballs.
Either the universe has eternally existed, mm-hmm. or there is a transcendent, maximally great being that caused the universe to begin.
There's an episode of Bluey talking about Dumb It Down. He has a puppet, and the puppet always says, "And why should I care?"
There's nothing that science will ever teach us that's going to pull us away from God. We're only going to be more in awe of His majesty and His creation. Hello and welcome again to the Sunday Huddle. As always, we are so grateful to be sponsored by Sports World. And man, as always, joined by Nathan and Brian. How are we doing, guys?
Exquisite today.
Doing great.
That's good. I think that there's going to be a point where he can't have the same thing over and over, and it can't be as corny every single time, but he surprises me every time.
He can. He can do it. If anyone can do it, he can.
Every single time he does. You know, man, we are all so blessed from this podcast to get to do what we're able to do, to be able to share our faith. An interesting part of what I get to do in my other job is I get a lot of opportunity to speak on college campuses to encourage kids and to share what it is and to do what's called apologetics, which is to give a defense for the faith. If there was probably a singular objection that I heard with the gospel, it certainly would be in the top three, is that science has done away with the need for God. Specifically, if I could tell you this, guys, I've heard it once, heard it 1,000 times, the Big Bang, this event that happened, we'll talk about how many years ago that it happened, it's done away with the necessity for God. Heard these objections before?
Right, but the science with a capital S, though, like the science.
Definitive.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. So there's no way that science could do anything other than disprove God.
We're all morons. Yeah, and I really did think of this, because I was thinking of this, Nathan, in context of the way you do the ministry with young people. I'm meeting with a lot of college students. Do you get this very often, this Big Bang science, man, we don't need God anymore because of this?
Yeah, so I definitely thought we were talking about a TV show whenever we were coming on here.
The Big Bang.
So I'm not prepared at all now. My bad.
That's good.
No, definitely one that they, because they see lots of just quick little like short videos and stuff online that you can make anything sound compelling if you only have 20 seconds to explain it.
Well said.
So they hear a lot of that, and it just like it practically makes sense, whether it be a student or anyone. It makes sense that if I want to set out to like prove my worldview or disprove God, that you would start at creation, right? Because if creation falls there or this, then everything else kind of crumbles along with it.
Yeah, it sure does, right? If science and let's just say from the outset, and good science proves the existence of God, I would contend, and science that doesn't always go into the realm of philosophy, though some science certainly does. But Big Bang cosmology. Can you kind of describe? Would you be able to describe maybe in layman's terms? If not, we can kind of take a shot at it. What is the Big Bang?
The Big Bang in the my layman's terms that you could say is that there was nothing, then all of a sudden there is an immense light, and the universe was created by the Big Bang.
Yeah. It seems to that this event, whatever it is, this point of singularity,
right,
that time, space, and matter come to an existence at this single point in matter.
Right.
Now, most scientists, I will tell you, most atheists that I dialogue with will say, we got to be careful to say what happened before the Big Bang,
right,
because it's imprecise. Because the Big Bang is when time begins. So to say before time began kind of doesn't make any sense. It's kind of like what's north of the North Pole, right? So you have to be very careful to use kind of like tenseless verbs, like before creation. Instead of before creation, you'd like to say sans creation.
You'd say what?
That's right. Yeah. Tenseless verb. You'd say sans creation.
One more time. Are you saying songs creation? Psalms?
S-A-N-S, sans creation.
I have seen that word many times on page, but I don't know if I've ever like heard
right?
it.
Right? Thank you for that.
In real life.
Good. Again, I'm a moron. Yeah. I've said
so. So before the Big Bang doesn't really make sense, right? It doesn't make sense. This is an interesting story. And most of the time whenever I'm about to give you something nerdy and I say it's an interesting story, it's not an interesting story.
So vouched.
But Big Bang is actually, I don't know if you know the origin of the term, it's actually was used as a pejorative. Oh. So there was this guy whose name was Hoyle that was actually, he advocated for what's called the steady state theory. And he believed that the universe just existed in this, just as it says, the name on the tin, it's a steady state. and he said it as kind of a pejorative on a radio show. This is ridiculous, this Big Bang that you speak of. He said it didn't make any sense at all. And up until then, that's kind of what science believed, that maybe just the universe always existed. So the Big Bang actually was not supported by any science prior to, but all of philosophy. And we can get into Aristotelian philosophy, Platonic philosophy, that they advocated that, no, there probably was, and we'll get into it a little bit more before I get to your students here, but that there has to be a necessary cause for all contingent things. And what's the best explanation for that? Am I boring the heck out of you?
All right.
So there's two things. There's two things that are called here, and there's two things. Things can either be necessary or contingent.
Okay.
So I'm going to use some philosophical jargon here. So contingent things are things that could exist. We use the words possible worlds. They could exist or it couldn't exist. A unicorn could exist. In some worlds, it could exist, perhaps. There could be a state of affairs where a unicorn does exist, but it doesn't exist in the actual world. Okay? But there are certain things that necessarily exist. And things that necessarily exist would be like shape definitions. In every world, a triangle has three sides.
Okay.
A square has four sides. There are certain things that necessarily, so we get like in numbers, shape definitions, 2 + 2 always equals 4. You didn't know that one, but 2 + 2 always equals 4. So there's things that necessarily exist. Well, we as theists believe that philosophy even points to there must be a necessary cause for all contingent things. And so this is the Big Bang Theory. Actually, I would say that it actually supports what the biblical account of creation is.
Nice.
Any thoughts there on the biblical account of creation? Yes.
Yeah. Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Imagine that. Imagine that Christians, theists have known for all of eternity that there was a necessary cause that caused all contingent things.
Right.
Yeah.
You keep talking about the Coulomb contingency and all these things.
Yeah.
Could you explain that? Is it time to unpack all that for us?
So I'm time to unpack. So I'm actually, I will tell you that I love, so there's different kinds of apologetics, and the particular apologetics that I employ is one called classical apologetics. So I will also often use like deductive arguments to prove the existence of God. And what you do is you kind of give a syllogism and you kind of give premises. And if the premises are true, the conclusion necessarily follows. So there's one that's often used for contingency arguments. I do broader contingency arguments. It's called the Coulomb.
Okay.
So the Coulomb says this. It says that number one, P1, premise one, everything that begins to exist has a cause. So think about that. That's an exhaustive statement. Everything that begins to exist has a cause. P2, the universe began to exist. Conclusion, therefore the universe has a cause. All right, so you got to think of those. How do you attack? Let's think about how would we attack those first two premises. Everything that begins to exist has a cause. How could you refute that? What can we point to that doesn't have that has a cause but doesn't have a beginning? What would you point to? Anything that you could point to?
I mean, God.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is, it's interesting. So I may have shared this before. When I was in graduate school last, we did a persuasive speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I used the Coulomb cosmological argument for the existence of God as my persuasive speech. My wife said, wouldn't it be great if you got your only B in speech class? And I said, get thee behind me, Satan. So here's what the deal is. But everything that begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe has a cause. And the first question that was raised up, well, what about God?
Yeah. And who created God is something that Richard Dawkins would even go in. Like, who created God?
Yeah. Well, P1 is exhaustive.
Mm-hmm.
It says, and it says this, and it's very particular. Everything that begins to exist has a cause. Doesn't say everything that exists has a cause. Everything that begins to exist has a cause. Here's what we have. And this is a beautiful part. Well, I love the Big Bang, man. Listen, if you're out there and you're concerned about science refuting God, I promise you it doesn't. But here's the beautiful part of it. Either the universe has eternally existed,
mm-hmm.
or there is a transcendent, maximally great being that caused the universe to begin. Well, the universe can't have always existed, and I could give multiple reasons for that. First of all, because Big Bang cosmology says, no, there's a beginning to the universe.
Right, a finite point.
There's a finite point, this point of singularity where everything began. And so therefore, we can't just say that the universe has always begun when it has a point. So what they do, I don't know if you guys have heard much of this, and I'm talking too much, I'll let y'all jump in. But there's one called a multiverse too, the multiverse thing.
Right.
Well, when you do the multiverse, what they say is that there was just a verse that preceded this universe. Well, that's cool.
Right.
But you've just backed up the problem one step
exactly,
is all you've done.
Right.
You haven't solved any problems, you know?
Right.
And maybe that is the best explanation for it. But I would say there has to be a necessary cause for any contingent things. And man, any thoughts where, man, that doesn't make sense, or this is kind of, you wrestle with this or struggle with this, is make sense to you?
I'm going to ask like a really, or just throw out there a really dumb question, just because I think that some people listening might like t- tie the two together. I think when some people hear Big Bang, they kind of marry it to evolution.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like those two things come hand in hand. So then whenever they hear you say something about the, I love the Big Bang, those words.
Yeah.
Something like that. Then I think that there's the assumption of, oh, okay, then you also, like, then you would fully, and I know I'm going off the rails.
No, I think you're right.
Then you would fully embrace then evolution then as well. If you say the Big Bang works in this, then evolution also points to God.
Right? Yeah. So it's good. And so, yeah, we're going to do it. We need to do it. I want to do another podcast on the evolution, right?
Cool.
So, cause I would fully embrace micro. I wouldn't embrace macro. I believe that there is evolution among the species that this adaptations.
Yeah.
There's an adaptation, right. And we got to be careful how we use that word evolution. Cause like you said, it has so much baggage with it and what we actually mean with that. So what I do is I simplify. So, you know, we're not going to get into young earth and what does Genesis actually do, young earth or old earth. So when I'm debating with somebody and I say, you know what, the universe had a beginning, and they say, well, is it 6,000 years or is it 13.8 billion? I think we're close to 14 billion is the estimate right now by most of science. And I will say, which one do you want? And then I'll say, how did it start?
Yep.
Because the big question is not how old is the earth. And again, we're not denying biblical inerrancy. We're not doing any of that right now. But for me, ad arguendo, I just want to advance the conversation. I'm going to say, how does it start? So even if we were able to point at, I don't believe we can, but even if we pointed at macroevolution events that seem to be macroevolution that tied these species, tied transition of fossils together, which I don't think we have. Even if we did have that, we have to ask, how did it start?
Right.
How do we get something from nothing?
So the age discussion, age of the earth, and then evolution discussion, you're saying, first, let's establish the how, and then we can talk about all of those things, like how did it start?
So well said. And I think that that's an important distinction we need to make, because people think that those necessarily tie together, and I'm saying we're not making the same claim. Great. I'm saying we're talking about the Big Bang, is there has to be a necessary cause for all contingent things. And here's the thing, man. All of philosophers for hundreds of years have debated about this.
Right.
This is something that philosophers they attacked, they confronted, they talked about. There is a rich amount of literature on talking about these necessary and contingent things to try to explain the beginning of the universe.
Absolutely. And to be clear, like the Kalam doesn't necessarily say it's the God of the Bible. This is to get us to a consistent starting point of there is a creator, there is intelligent design. Obviously, there's other different evidence that we would use to point to the God of the Bible, but this is just to agree that we're not something from nothing.
I think that you've brought an important point. Is that all cosmological arguments get to us is to a necessary cause for contingent things. Right. We've not even made that personal yet.
Right.
So how do we get, Jeff? That's a great observation. How do we get from there's a necessary cause and now it's a personal agent? How do we possibly even get there? Well, I think we do it in steps, right? So first of all, I'm going to say that my claim is I would embrace something called causal finitism. I believe every effect can only have a finite number of causes. Okay. I believe that it's impossible to have an actual infinite regress instantiated in the world of the real.
So let me dumb that down for me.
So just because we explain a cause or effect and it's caused by this, and then we say, well, how did we get that one? It was one that previous to that. So there's philosopher, Hume Edwards, it's called the Hume Edwards principle. They say, hey, listen, if you've not done anything logically wrong, if you say, well, we know this cause caused this domino, knocked over this domino, and knocked over this domino, and knocked it, you haven't done anything that's logically wrong by saying that. So they said all that there is an infinitely long row of dominoes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the explanation. It's Hume Edwards. Jeff, listen, A hit B, B hit C, and then there was one before A, and there was just, it infinitely regresses backwards. I would say that it's impossible metaphysically to have an actual infinite regress of events.
Right. Especially in regards to the Big Bang, where we're saying
There has to be. First of all, scientifically, we point to the singularity.
Right.
Secondly, then philosophically, it can't be metaphysically realized.
Right.
So here's what, so in answer to this, a philosopher named Leibniz gave an example like this. And Leibniz said this, and this is beautiful. And we're killing our whole audience. But check this. Leibniz said this, and I'm excited about this. Leibniz said, the Hume Edwards principle is faulty. He said, here's why we know. He said, let's pray. Let's say I have a book in my hands. And I think the book that Leibniz used was Euclid's Elements or something like that. We have this book in our hand. And he said, how did you get that book? I said, well, I copied it from a book previous. So how'd you get that one? Well, I copied it from a book previous. How'd you get that one? I copied it. He said, wait a minute. That's not an explanation.
Right.
You've given no explanation for why we have this book in our hands. What you've done is there has to ultimately be an author.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So many people say, no, it can exist. We can have just this infinitely long book of copies, but that doesn't make, again, logically, we haven't violated to say that if we've explained with cause and effect, we haven't violated any law of logic. I would just say metaphysically, it's unrealizable.
Right.
It can't be, again, can't be instantiated in the world of real. Doesn't make any sense to me.
And so that's important. So then maybe this is an oversimplification, but no. This is the, you dumbed it down and dumb it down even further. No. It would be, so the present can never arrive if the past is infinite.
So that's what the point of right. time. That's exactly right. Well said. So if we if time infinitely regressed backwards, we would never arrive at the moment we're at right now. Right. You could have never arrived at this moment.
Yeah, just like in the documentary Spaceballs when they were.
Spaceballs was a documentary. It was deep documentary. Yeah. Hawking, is that who did that?
That's, Stephen I'm
Hawking
pretty confident.
Did, Stephen Hawking, right? So, but yes, you're right. And so that is a way to dumb it down. There's actually philosophers who use it instead of a temporal regression, they use it in a hierarchical. We won't go into there, but I think it's an important distinction that there's no way we could arrive at that. So then the second part of this is, okay, so some say, well, if it's just long enough, you just can explain it. Like we have this, like an infinite, another, there are philosophers use a lot of different analogies for them. I love the one of the extension cords. So we have the extension cord that goes to a light, right? And I say, well, how did you get that one? They say, well, it's just attached to another extension cord. Like, well, it's that. Well, wait a minute.
To my neighbor's house.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you do. That's a sin. But here's the thing. No. But they say, well, it's just an infinitely long number of extension cords. No, there has to be a necessary cause for all contingent things. So here's your question. And I think this is what you have to get to. And I think this is where I truly do, and I truly mean this. I see light bulbs come on whenever I talk to people about this. When we talk about this infinite regress, they said, well, in philosophy, they call it like a brute fact. They just say, well, there's just the universe has always existed. Here's what I say. Or there's just cause. There's a necessary cause. We don't know what's happening. And here's the question you get. And this is kind of complicated. It kind of make your brain hurt, but for a second. So how do you get an effect with a cause? Or how do you get an effect with a cause when this cause is permanent for all of eternity?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get an effect that has a beginning from a cause that is permanent? How do you get an effect, this effect, with a beginning from a cause that is permanent? If the cause is sufficient for the effect for all of eternity, its effect ought to be felt for an eternity. Yet its effect, according to the Big Bang, is only felt a finite time ago. Thus, how do you get a new effect without any antecedent determining causes? You have to have, the only way we can have that is we have to have a personal agent endowed with free will who can make the choice to create. Because a natural universe can't create. It's causally inert. Like, yeah. So other necessary things like numbers are necessary. Yeah, but numbers are causally inert. They don't create, right? They're descriptive. They don't make things. So we have to have the personal agent because that's the only way we can go from, and this is not really the way to say it, but that's the only way we can go from having nothing to having something.
Right.
There has to be something that makes a choice to create.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. To translate essentially what you're saying again. So again, the Kalam goes back to pointing to intelligent design. And so you're trying to establish a creator. So like someone like Sam Harris could say, like, even if the universe has a cause, why would we assume that it's a personal God? And you're saying that with the argument of free will, essentially, that's how we know that there is a creator.
That's the only way we can have a effect with a beginning from a cause that is permanent with, again, without any antecedent determining causes.
Right.
So if not, it's just this causal chain of things that take place.
Right.
And so how do we move? So let's say we have this, sometimes in philosophy they call it, there's just a brute fact that there's this thing that creates. How does the thing create? How does it go from nothing? How does it go from inaction to action?
Right. It sounds like you're trying to quote Newton's laws there.
Yeah, yeah. How do you go from inaction to action? Well, there has to be something that does it. But if it's not personal,
right.
How does it move from effect to a beginning, from a cause that is permanent? How does it do that?
Right. Impersonal forces can't do things like that.
Again,
they can't make decisions.
They can't make decisions. They're causally inert. So again, we haven't gotten to the God of the Bible yet.
Right.
But we've got, and that's not even what I'm trying to do on this right. episode where I'm boring people. What I'm trying to say, is that there's this personal agent endowed with free will that has to make that does something in creation and creates time. And then you get into this crazy man, and we'll bring it up one time when we want to really kill our audience. But what is God's relationship to time? How does God
right.
interact with time? You know, I would contend and maintain that God is outside of time.
Right.
He's outside of time from the beginning, and he remains outside of time. There are some philosophers that say God enters into time.
right,
at the moment of creation by virtue of his causal relationship. I don't necessarily got William Lane Craig is a brilliant philosopher, says that that's what happened. He enters into time, so he becomes temporal. I don't think that that's right, but right. It's an interesting observation anyway.
Right.
So then the creator, call it God, whatever you want, the thing that started all of it has to be personal. So that will be how you respond to if someone say, yes, we can be on the same page that something eternal like led to the Big Bang, led to the creation of this stuff. So, and I know there's other thoughts, but like it's energy. It's just energy is eternal, and that eventually is what led to this. So that will be the response to that as well. It has to be something personal because
– does have to be something personal. And then the problem with energy is something.
Right.
Energy is not nothing. So what I'm saying is that energy even would be something that's contingent, could exist and could not exist. So it doesn't have creative power, right? It doesn't have that ability to create. And we could get into a thousand other arguments on like teleological argument, the design of the universe and how it's perfect for life and all these little things that seem to – we make – it's an abductive argument for the existence of God. What – the situation we're in right now – and we'll get into some of these other ones in another episode. But some of the situation we're at right now, where it seems as if the universe has a beginning, if it seems as if it's designed for life, it seems that we have moral values. What's the best explanation? Abductively, what would be the best explanation for the situation we find us in? I would say it would be a maximally great being who created that and caused all that.
Right. And the cool thing that you talk about with energy, like that's the first law of thermodynamics. It is specifically that one about how energy, it can't be created or destroyed. It only changes forms. But it's cool because a lot of people will try to point to that one in the Kalam argument. But actually, the second law of thermodynamics is better because of the insistence of entropy, meaning that there's more disorder that is coming. And so that's even cool because when you look at the Big Bang, you see that the universe is expanding and slowing down, which is exactly what that law would indicate.
It's accelerating as it expands, and then simultaneously it's going, just as you said, from order to chaos.
Right.
It's getting more disorganized, not less, not more organized. It's getting less disorganized. I would say, and you don't have to do this because, again, you can point to infinite universes or this causal chain. William Lane Craig brings up an interesting one, a BGV theorem. It's called Bord-Guthin-Vilenkin. And it says this. It says, in a physical cosmology that states that any universe that has been on average expanding throughout its history must have a past space-time boundary, implying it cannot be infinite in the past. So the BGV theorem, which is deterministic. It's fully vetted. I mean, scientists don't disagree with it much. There's some other ideas on that. BGV theorem is sound. And it says that our universe has an earlier space-time boundary, that there's a beginning. And that would, again, support most of what science teaches us, that it seems that time, space, and matter begin at this point of singularity. They all three come, because you can't have one without the other.
Right.
They have to all three kind of coexist. Yeah, if you have matter but no space to put it in, where does the matter go? Right. If there's no elapsing of time, how does it? So they're all interdependent. Thus, again, the BGV theorem holds close.
Well, for the four people that are still listening to us now, thank you so much for your faithfulness.
We are so glad.
Nathan and I, our eyes have glazed over at
least 38 times. Yeah, y'all did. They're always bored by what I say.
But this is really good information. One, why is this important to us? Why is this relevant to us? And then also, dumb it down so that way we can actually use it.
Yeah, I'll let you go first on the payoff there.
I was about to ask. I was going to say there's an episode of Bluey talking about Dumb It Down. And one of the he has a puppet, and the puppet always says, "And why should I care?" That's what I was about to ask you, Jeff. Why should I care?
What a great question and a great way to end this episode. That the Bible is not a science textbook, but that which it says philosophically is true. That God created everything, and here's what is stinking amazing. That if all that we've talked about is true, there's nothing that science will ever teach us that's going to pull us away from God. Mm-hmm. We're only going to be more in awe of His majesty and His creation. That's what we should do. So then also when you go to the secular school and someone says we've done away with the need for God and you're doing the God of the gaps by creating or positing this necessary cause for all contingent things.
Yeah. God is dead and we killed him.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you didn't. And he's necessary. Right. And it's the only way that any of this logically makes true. But here's the beautiful part. He created all that we have. And not only did he create all that we have, he created you. Hmm. And he has purpose for your life. He's created all that we see, but nevertheless, he cares about you and he wants to know you. And in fact, if you don't know him in a relationship, he wishes to know you in that way. I would say this, my apologetics adventure has caused me to know that the more I study, the more I learn, the more I learn how great God is. Your God is big enough for your questions. Any questions that you have, we would love to. Hey, fill out in the comment section. You have questions. We'd love to answer anything we can. And we're so glad that you're able to join us today.
Yeah, and down in the description or in the bio, wherever you are listening, there's a link there. If you want to win some free Sports World merch, you could click on that link there, and we can maybe get that into your hands. And while you're there, be sure that you like and subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review. That definitely helps us as we push this out to more people.
Peace!